Welcome back to another week of Autastic, your comedian's guide to autism.
Weird way to start.
I was trying to look at the little numbers to see if they were moving, and they were moving, so we can include this.
I gave you the thumbs up.
Yeah, I thought you would give me, I wasn't sure if it was a thumbs like test or start, so I thought it might be like a test one. So this is your comedian's guide to autism. We're two comics, and we have loved ones who have autism. I have a severely autistic son who's 20, he'll be 21 in less than 3 weeks. Is that possible? Ooh, baby. We can finally do like Peter and drink. We're not going to do that for him, but
no, it's probably
legally
not a good idea.
He could.
Probably not a good idea.
Not for him, no.
My brother Peter has autism. He likes the brewskis.
He's a big fan of beer.
But I'll tell you what, he's off beer for a month.
Ooh.
He's like, I'll do it until Christmas time.
I like it.
He wants to get in better shape.
Well, self-control is good.
He is at the gym. He's lost 10 pounds.
Wow, that's why you joined a gym. I see what's happening. You're competitive with your brother.
Kind of.
I like it.
And he has lost 10 pounds. He is goes to the little gym in his building, and we bumped him up from, he gets 22 minutes. I don't know why he did it 22 minutes. I was like, well, maybe do 33 minutes.
Is it 22 minutes the length of a Simpsons episode?
It might be. It is.
I think it's pretty close.
So he's just watching Simpsons?
Well, I just think it's like a good little amount of, it's a good measurement of time for him. It's like one Simpsons episode. I get it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then
you could bump up to two Simpsons episodes, 42 minutes, 44 minutes. You might do it.
You might. It's just tough to be on a treadmill that long in jeans.
That was my next question. Has he moved to sweatpants?
No. Full on jeans.
I still love sweatpants,
but it's probably good for sweating. And then he does one set of bench press and one set of pull downs, and I'm getting him to do two sets.
Two sets.
Two sets is good.
I think it's great.
And then I'm proud of him. He's off the hooch. He's on archery, but I also learned that his archery is not. I was hoping it was going to be like under the umbrella of Special Olympics.
Okay.
Special needs. So he'd be around other special needs people. Mm-hmm. And maybe
meet some friends.
Maybe meet a girl,
ooh,
meet some
ladies.
Friends, you know, a little female Robin Hood,
a
you know.
Connection. Maid Marian?
Yeah, just get shot in the heart with an arrow, you know.
And talk about that for the next 20 years, like all of us.
Yeah, and I was telling my parents were like, no, it's not. It's just regular. And I was like, but it should be better if he can maybe, you know, if he was around more people like him, he could meet a girl. And my dad was like, we're just worried about you. Why don't you meet a girl?
Your dad's like, Peter, where's your girlfriend? You're the older brother. You're still single.
Yeah, so I was like, all right, man.
Like
okay.
Solid burn.
I'll get off the topic.
Nice talking to you, Dad.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas. Talk to you later.
And he was like, well, we don't want to just, you know, keep him in, you know, we want to integrate him with, like, people who don't, you know, without disabilities and
that's
blah, 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 blah.
That's an interesting, that's a topic of discussion that all the autism groups have, where integration versus.
What's the balance?
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, he doesn't seem to really, even with his special needs group, he doesn't, you know, he's always off on his own. As my dad said, he's always off on his own anyway. You know, they'll do like, we'll invite everybody up to the cottage. They'll do once a year. They'll have his group up. And, you know, within 10 minutes, Peter's by himself in a corner, you know, so it's just like, he's a loner.
Socialization's tough.
Yeah. So,
you're alone.
I'm alone. I'm working on this new bit that like, I probably should settle down and get a girlfriend, but like, I'm just weird. Like, I don't get lonely. I think it might be because I grew up with somebody with autism. Like I had learned, like I would just, you know, I'd roll the ball to him. It wouldn't roll back. And I'm like, I'll make my own fun, I guess.
So
like,
just set up playing ball against the wall.
Yeah.
Bouncing off the wall to yourself.
I don't know. So it's like not, I don't know. So maybe he's the same. We just do the K's. We don't get lonely. So I should force myself.
You move up to the Scottish Highlands and live by yourself like your forefathers.
My forefathers and just hunt.
There could be only one.
Yeah,
wait,
yeah.
What? That's not how that works.
Highland, yeah. But I don't know if there's similarities there or I'm just a weirdo. I don't know. But he's
Probably both.
Tinge of both. He's doing great. Peter's really happy. I can tell he's happy. I always say this on this podcast. I know he's happy because he's not calling me a lot.
He's busy.
Busy, and he's not lonely. He calls me a lot when he's lonely. We did have a chat. Oh, I called him. He's always like, call me sometimes. Okay. And then he also goes like, well, you know, you said you were going to call me back, but you didn't. Like, he'll call me and I'll be in the middle of something. I always try and answer and I'm like, I can't right now. I'm doing whatever. And he goes, okay, but call me back. And I go, okay. And then sometimes I honestly forget and it takes like 2 days and he'll call me and be like, you said you're going to call me back. I'm like, I'm sorry, man. And, I called him the other day. And he was like, I can't, I'm doing, you know, laundry or something. Or no, he was in the middle of work or something. I was like, okay. He was making food. And then he had to go do his, he was going to go meet his group for dinner. And I go, okay. And then he never called me back. I was like, call me back, though. Never call me back. But I talked to
him. Too much fun.
He's doing great.
Boston Pizza is the big Canadian brand, which makes no sense to me.
It makes no sense.
You have the big brand up there, A&W Root Beer. It used to be American. Those are all gone here.
Yeah.
Very weird.
A&W Burgers are huge up there.
Doesn't A&W stand for American Western or something?
Does it? That's hilarious. You know what else is funny? When we're on the subject, TD Bank is huge in America.
Yeah, Toronto, isn't it?
Toronto Dominion Bank. Yeah. The Dominion of Canada is what they're talking about.
Yeah, because they bought TD Ameritrade. That was their entryway 25 years ago. I still have an account with them. Actually, I have both, and they won't connect. I've got a TD Ameritrade U.S. stock account and a TD, and I opened a Canadian bank account because I'm up there so much, and they don't interact. It's kind of weird.
I think they bought WaMu, Washington
They bought
Mutual.
That, too.
Yeah. Anyway, when all the big financial crisis happened, and the Canadians were like, well, we have laws that won't let us go bankrupt, so we're huge and you're dead.
We'll buy you now.
Yeah. And anyway, what's hilarious to me is that the Boston sports teams play in Toronto Dominion Bank Place.
All right. That's true.
It's great. Makes me laugh. Take that, Boston.
Suck it. Yeah, but we beat you.
Yeah.
Don't change the subject.
Change the subject, though, please. But they didn't beat us basketball.
It's true. Maple Leafs, though, historically, it's unbelievable how bad they are.
Terrible.
I don't get it.
Quickly, though, Raptors, awesome. We'll talk about this off
air. Oh, you mean this year? They look okay.
They look great. They're 8-2 or something.
It's early. But all right, last thing about this, because I know we get sidetracked on this, but it's early. It reminds me of the old Raptor teams before they had Kawhi. They're always a great regular season game.
Sure.
Team. That was never the issue.
Yeah.
That was never the issue. Can they close?
We got Spicy P.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. We have another fantastic. Oh, wait. You know what?
JJ's fine, by the way.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
New trampoline.
New trampoline. This is a week in review for Kirk. Yeah, I did mine already.
We did bought him another indoor trampoline that he pokes a hole through eventually. But so he's got the outdoor one, the big one.
Yeah.
It's winter in Sweden, so now we got the indoor trampoline.
It's like a little one?
Yeah, it's like
I remember those.
It's like what they set up at the Raptors games for dunking at halftime by those wacky gymnasts. So he loves it. Loves it. All right,
JJ's gonna be doing flips.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Why do you think he loves the trampoline?
I think it stimulates him. Like you get a lot of sensory feedback through your joints by bouncing like that. Mm-hmm. The joints, like every time you hit the ground and then bounce up. You get a lot of, you can feel all that and all your little joints. That's what I think.
And it's probably kind of calming in a way. It's probably like when you're doing that, all these other, because people with autism, especially severe autism, they have sensory overload, like lights and sounds and what have
it's
you.
It's very calm.
So if you are bouncing up and down, you are focused and concentrating on that, and all the other stuff probably quiets down.
You might be able to push all that stuff down.
It might be like therapeutic. I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
Speaking about the specifics of autism, we have a special episode this week.
We have another special episode, another great interview by roving reporter Jill Escher. Jill, thank you so much for doing this one. This is our last in a series that she recorded at the INSAR, which was in Montreal. It is the Institute. What is it for? What is it? Institute for Autism Research, right? And
you're close.
What is it? Institute Society for Autism Research, right? Whatever. That's what it is. See, now we're going to have to edit this because you made me second guess. But that's right. Is the Institute...
Well, it definitely has an S as the second letter, so Institute, but then there's an S there.
Society.
International Society for Autism Research.
Damn it. You win.
You wrote it down, too.
I can't read my writing. What was it? What is it?
This is the International Society for Autism Research.
That makes sense.
It's from the summer. It was in May in Ottawa. No, it was in Toronto. Sorry.
It was in Montreal.
Montreal. Sorry.
Yeah, I got that. And this is Catherine Lord. We've had her on before. She was also interviewed by by Jill Escher, Rovering Reporter.
Oh, by me actually.
Oh, what, was it by you? That's right. You drove up to interview her, right?
No, it was the they were the ones that helped sponsor that. Remember, they did a study where they were trying to collect saliva samples, and I said spit like 15 times.
Oh, that was
interview.
Hilarious.
And that was to her, and I kept saying, "I'm sorry, my lord," because her name was Kathy Lord, which I thought was funny. But yeah, she's
a great interview, by the way.
Very great interview and a very accomplished lady.
Yes,
it gives me hope when I hear about people that are together, organized, and have given their lives to this.
She has a
PhD from UCLA, and was one of the early researchers in. Diagnostic and identification tools, and a recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award,
and an early author in the subject. Right. And it's one of the first things that Jill Escher touches upon this in the interview that she read and was like, "Oh, this is my children have autism."
Yep.
So Catherine Lord has made the world a better place and made all of our lives easier in a way.
Better.
So better. Yeah. So it's an honor and a pleasure to present to you this interview.
Hey everyone, roving reporter Jill Escher here for the Autastic Podcast in Montreal, Canada at the INSAR meeting, the International Society for Autism Research, where there are, I don't know, 5 billion jillion autism researchers all in one place. I have the incredible good fortune to be sitting here with the winner of the Lifetime Achievement Award this year, Dr. Catherine Lord. Hello, Dr. Lord.
Hi, Jill.
Thank you so much for joining us on Autastic. When my son, who's now 20, was diagnosed, I bought a book on autism. Guess who the author was?
I don't know.
It may have been you. So I have some PTSD sitting here with you from those early days when I was like, what? He has what? What's autism? What? What? And, you know, I learned a lot actually reading your work. So thank you. And you're still contributing, right, to the autism community. So you did... just get this award. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about your history in autism and you know, what you've done and what you're doing now.
I started out as an undergraduate working for Ivar Lovaas.
Oh, wow.
And I worked
at UCLA.
At UCLA. So I worked with two kids who were brought out of Camarillo State Hospital, lived at UCLA, and I did classic discrete trial behavioral teaching, and one of them just shone. I mean, he was ahead of me the whole way. The other child never learned to imitate Bach, which I was trying to teach him by giving him M&Ms and Fritos. Mm-hmm. And we spent a lot of time in the bathroom because he loved water. And it was so incredibly boring that I taught him to wash his hands and dry his hands, and he loved paper towels. And so I then sort of fled from that, saying, well, this is not the answer for everybody because the kids are so different, and went to graduate school to learn about how do kids learn, and then ended up teaching preschool, a non-categorical special ed preschool class, and half of my kids in the class had autism, all different from each other. And so from that point, I went to teach in North Carolina, which is a state-funded autism program, which... really, at that point, emphasized working with families. And then I've just sort of stayed in the field ever since.
Wow, so you started as an undergrad.
I did. I started at like 19 years old.
Oh, and no one really knew what autism was.
No.
Yeah, they probably were saying, "What? Who are you working
exactly.
with?
Exactly. Are they artistic? Can they paint? Yep.
Yeah, wow. And so then you're known for your work in diagnostics, really kind of screening kids, yeah. identifying kids. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. I mean, initially, as part of a research project on genetics that was being done in Canada, the UK, and the US, we realized that everyone was using different diagnostic systems.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea there, which has turned out to be
around what time frame was that?
That was in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, the idea was that if we could find 50 purely autistic kids, actually 50 families that had two purely autistic kids, whatever pure autism was,
right.
that we would be able to find the gene for autism. But we had to find these families across these three countries, and everyone was using different ways of defining autism. So at that point, working with a professor in England who is Michael Rutter, who was very famous at the time, we decided to try to have standardized ways of deciding who had autism. Again, thinking there was this pure autism, which I think now nobody thinks.
Nobody, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But that was our
goal. Back then, that was an idea,
yeah.
right?
And so what has been interesting is I think that the primary, that those instruments have been valuable in allowing different groups across the world to put together large data sets so that they can study rare forms of autism.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know from the data you get from these instruments that a child, for example, has lots of repetitive behaviors, or this child has relatively mild social deficits, or the child doesn't talk. But I think the primary use has become that people use them in the clinics.
Right. So right. there are now standardized instruments mm-hmm. that really weren't available before, right?
Right.
And just tell our audience a little bit about the major instruments that are used.
I think there are three kinds of major instruments. Mm-hmm. One is the ADOS, and that involves a clinician working with the child or adult for about 45 minutes. And they do a standard set of tasks that are different.
I've been through that with both my kids. Yeah.
the different tasks for different ages and different language levels. But the idea is to really look at the child's strengths and weaknesses within a social domain. There's a long parent interview. You may have done that
oh,
one,
yes.
too.
Yes.
Very long, which is a different kind of interview than is done usually in the U.S. because it's more open-ended. Basically, the idea is to get a parent to talk to you about how their child handles different situations. And then you do score that in terms of do they handle it in a way that is highly related to autism or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are questionnaires.
Right. And I've done those too. Now, let's move on a little bit to the DSM.
Mm-hmm.
So DSM stands for Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, and it's considered the Bible of psychiatry, right? So we define mental disorders by what exists in the pages of this very large book.
Right.
And there are how many disorders are now described
goodness,
in the DSM?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Hundreds.
Yeah.
Hundreds.
I mean, you know, oppositional defiant disorder, OCD, ADHD, and autism obviously has been one of them. And it's morphed and changed a little bit over the years. It debuted in, the DSM-3?
Right.
Right. And then it went to the DSM-4 with a slightly different character. And now, as of 2013, we have what's called the DSM-5.
That's right.
Which you were the chair of the committee, right?
I wasn't the chair, I was on it.
You were on the committee. Okay. So you were on that committee of, I don't know what it was, like 12, 15 researchers and practitioners to sort of rethink how we conceptualize autism in a clinical setting.
That's right.
And one thing about the DSM is it's not a biological measure. It's a clinical presentation.
Yes.
Right? And it could have different biological roots.
Absolutely.
But it has to have some bottom line. Can you describe the bottom line that is common in the many, many different kinds of autisms?
Yeah. I think that the idea was, well, let me back up 1 second. Mm-hmm. The reason DSM is so important is DSM and the World Health Organization version, which is ICD, now ICD-11, are used for billing codes. And so anytime you go to a doctor or you get a service, if you're going to get insurance to pay for it or someone's going to use it, they have to give you this label.
299.
Yes, exactly. 299. That's right.
Right.
And so it becomes more important because of that, because that's how the certainly American health system works. The DSM, original DSM, moved from calling children with autism schizophrenic, so childhood schizophrenic, to then saying, okay, there's something special called infantile autism, mm-hmm. which is differentiated from schizophrenia because it happens in young children, failing to realize that those children grow up. Then there was the idea that we have to broaden this because the kids described in infantile autism were all very young mm-hmm. and very severe. So there was a broadening of the concept, but there were also lists of all kinds of different subcategories within DSM-4. And
that include Asperger's, PDD-NOS.
Exactly. Yeah. Rett's.
Childhood disintegrative disorder.
Yes, or Fragile X. And so one of the ideas of DSM-5 was to separate the biology, to say this isn't a biological diagnosis. It really is a diagnosis based on the behavior mm-hmm. that someone shows at different ages. And also to recognize that autism is often, not always, a lifelong condition, and people change over time. So a person who has autism looked very different at age 2 than they may at age 20. And so we need to have a broader description of the characteristics of what autism is right. that allows you to have examples at age 20 or age 2.
Okay. Which brings me to my next question. So the DSM has been a little, the recent iteration mm-hmm. of the DSM has been a little controversial. Some people, including me, I'm going to be perfectly honest, who thinks it's overbroad. So instead of having sort of spelled out categories, mm-hmm. There is one umbrella term, which is autism spectrum disorder, mm-hmm. or ASD. And then there are 3 levels of support, level 1, level yeah. 2, level 3. My kids would both be level 3, which mm-hmm. would be the highest level of support. Level mm-hmm. 1 would be minimal support, et cetera. This has caused, problems because you're throwing people with incredibly different clinical right. manifestations, night and day manifestations yeah. under the same umbrella. And while there might be some, similarities mm-hmm. there, some social yeah. deficits, some sensory deficits, whatever, some, mild, right. communication impairment, the differences can greatly outweigh
Absolutely.
Those differences. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think should happen now? Are you happy with the way the DSM-5 turned out, or do you think maybe we should change it? And I just want to suggest just 2 things. Mm-hmm. First, that maybe there should be a diagnostic approach for young children, mm-hmm. but then a different diagnostic mm-hmm. approach for adults, right?
Yeah.
And that's not in the DSM. Yeah. You don't see that.
No.
And I think that's just an oversimplification of, what we really see in the world.
Yeah.
Because you might have a lot more commonality early on and
yes.
almost none later.
You are
okay,
I'm right.
You're going to point me to the DSM-5 committee now, okay? Or DSM-6, I'm
yes.
sorry.
I don't know who's doing DSM-6. But, I think that's a very, very good point. And I think that may be a way to divide it. Because, in fact, one of the problems with differentiating children, for example, people who have very severe disabilities from people who are milder, is at age 2, we can't tell.
Yeah.
And also, by age 5, we often have a pretty good idea, but it's complicated, and parents mm-hmm. may not be ready to hear that this is a very severe disability.
Mm-hmm. True.
And mm-hmm. so how we make that change over time is I think you're yeah. right on top of it. By adulthood, it matters much more if you have an intellectual disability and autism, or you mm-hmm. don't. If you have right. severe other kinds of problems like depression, anxiety, or aggressive behavior, and autism, you're in a very different position
yep.
than somebody who doesn't. So I think you are absolutely right. I think what is... It didn't work before. I mean, I do believe that the idea of Asperger syndrome did not work mm-hmm. because it was used in so many different ways.
Right.
And so it just didn't mean anything except the people who had Asperger's were better than people who didn't, which I think is not good. I mean, they're wealthier, they had better educated parents, they were smarter, but then after that it meant, you know, it could mean they're worse in some things, it could mean they're better. So I think that didn't work, but mm-hmm. I do think we need a better way of recognizing the huge individual differences and a way to figure that out in a way that can be conveyed to families mm-hmm. and in a meaningful way. I mean, now you can do it by basically looking at language level, looking at intellectual disability, looking at other additional conditions.
Those are proxies for kind of level of impairment generally.
That's right.
Yeah, but it's not perfect, and
no.
I agree. And I do understand that you know, under the DSM-IV, different clinical settings were using the terms in different ways.
Absolutely.
So one person at one setting might get an Asperger's diagnosis. Someone might get a PDD-NOS diagnosis. Yeah. Someone else might get an autism diagnosis. They all might have the same features.
Yes.
So, and that wasn't fair or good, right. and it wasn't clear. So I can understand it from that point of view. But now I think the pendulum swung to the other side, and we need to think. So maybe the adulthood versus childhood diagnostic regimen would be one way to help that.
Right.
I also think I kind of miss the term autistic disorder, mm-hmm. which is what my kids were diagnosed with, because mm-hmm. autistic disorder, oh my gosh, we're going to have to close this. Sorry, we're at a live conference, everybody. But no, we're going to have to wrap it up. But Dr. Lord, congratulations on your Lifetime Achievement Award and all you've done to contribute to this field. And thanks for talking to our audience on Autastic today.
Sure, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, what'd you think, bud?
Well, considering that I have trouble...
Reading your own handwriting?
Reading my own handwriting. Looking at my notes here. I did not really realize the power the DSM had. And it was an interesting sort of walk into the history of autism that I always love hearing history and how things developed and everything.
You're history major.
I'm a history major. I somehow got 3.4 GPA.
Out of a 10-point scale.
Out of an 11-point scale.
I was being a jerk. No, I thought it was very insightful. I do like where it talks about, when she talks about the early stages of it, trying to identify quote-unquote purely autistic kids to quote-unquote the standardized autism.
Mm-hmm.
And then the insight... it's funny because early days of autism, quote unquote, still were only 20 years ago. It's still around mm-hmm. JJ's birth time.
Absolutely.
So, because that's one of the things people ask me about, oh, did you have genetic testing? I'm like, I don't think that was even a thing when my son was, in the late 90s, early 2000s. That was not a thing yet.
Uh-huh.
So it's interesting how the thing has evolved. And the DSM, because I remember reading something about the DSM standardizing or taking in or taking out... bipolar disorder is the newest thing they're talking about, and borderline personality. Like one of them has been removed now from the official whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the DSM has a long history of partially flawed history. I mean, being homosexuality was in there obviously for a long time, and that's been removed. And so I feel like it's a living document that continues to evolve. And so mm-hmm. I think we're the DSM-5 they talked about. And so I like the fact that they're continuing to.
DSM-6 coming out.
To evolve, the definitions and stuff. And I thought it was insightful, too, of why they got rid of Asperger's, because I was surprised they got rid of it. But when she said, they got rid of it because it doesn't work, because all it means is, you're slightly better than a regular autistic. Things are going slightly easier than a regular autistic person, but it doesn't capture. Is that because of your background or resources?
Yeah.
So, okay.
You have more educated parents.
Right. Because there's still no biological way to test for autism, they mm-hmm. talked about, which is very insightful, too. Mm-hmm. Still, you're just looking at at the, yeah. Anyway, so I
and
that was
Jill Escher came in strong with a great suggestion for having two diagnostics, one for kids and one for adults when you're testing, because it's two different.
Well, and they talked about that too. That was very, for me, it's become much more clear JJ's challenges as he's aged.
Right.
The difference between a 5-year-old with autism, I mean, or let's say a 4-year-old. A lot of 4-year-olds don't speak well.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he doesn't speak or says a few things, mm-hmm. the gap's not that wide. Now that he's going to be 21, the gap is obviously much broader between, you know, somebody who's at university and somebody who's still having accidents. So, toilet accidents, I mean.
Oh, I got it.
So, I thought that was very insightful, very interesting. Thanks so much for being on our show, Catherine.
Catherine Lord, you're the best. Jill Escher, thanks once again.
Great work.
This has been Autastic, the Comedian's Guide to Autism. Hope you enjoyed it. And it's fun to have, intelligent experts on the show. Little break from
it's good to have a balance.
Our rambling. It's certainly, it's a good balance.
Our idiocy.
We do the part where you go, oh boy, you just laugh at these guys.
Oh, there's a lid for every pot. It's great. You need ditch diggers. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. the best part about this podcast is we have to work hard for it not to become a basketball podcast.
You have no idea how much I'm pushing down right now that I want to tell you about the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah,
as soon as we push stop, it's coming out.
I know. I was like, I was like, no, we can't. But that's us. Take us or leave us. Patreon.com/autastic. If you'd like to donate, is secure and safe way to donate to our podcast on a regular or one-time basis. patreon.com/autastic.
Or Venmo me.
If you do that, I'll never see the money.
Man, that's just a joke.
But, yeah.
I split the money with you every month.
Yeah.
I still Venmo it to you.
We'll see.
Getting so rich off.
But we do appreciate all of you that do donate. Thank you very much. You're the best. You guys help us keep doing this. It is a lot of time. And anyway, moving on. I'm at Instagram K on Instagram. Instagram K on Instagram. And at Mr. Graham K on Twitter. You can follow me on Facebook, Graham K. You can join my comedian page, and I still got some room left on my regular page. There's an Autastic Facebook page if you want to join. You can post questions there if you'd like. We sometimes post pictures of JJ or my brother or articles that we talk about on the pod. Kirk, where can people find you?
Guys, add me all social media as a Kirk Smith Comedy. Come see a real show, regular show. Right now I'm pushing my Instagram, not on Twitter much. But same thing, I've got the old Facebook and Insta. And like, rate, and review this podcast. If it's a high rating, if it's a 1, just delete it. You don't have to tell us. We believe you. That's it, guys. Have a great week. You can do it.